The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today. Ken Swanson, Arrowhead Pride Laboratory. It's the Mailbag Edition. Fresh off the Chiefs' last game in 2 weeks. A little bye week action. We're all looking forward to that, especially. This is that time of year where the bloggers start getting tired. So it's time to take a little bit of a rest. But here to help me answer all of your questions, my dear pals. First, find him on Twitter at Chief in Carolina. Maddie, what are you doing with your bye week? You can't say grinding the college tape.
Then nothing? I'm going to do absolutely nothing. So this is one of my favorite weeks of the year. I love the bye week because no matter what time it comes in the season, it could be week two for all I care, but the bye week is the signal that it is time to start preparing for the NFL draft. Thankfully, for the Chiefs, they usually get this mid-season or late bye, it seems like, lately. So this is a perfect time to start gearing up for the NFL draft. We're almost to Thanksgiving. This is a perfect time. This is a great week for me. I'm going to have a lot of fun watching a lot of college prospects going on right now. We got all the conferences playing. So that's my bye week. And I believe later this week, we might have a draft show for you guys.
Yes, we will have a draft show for you later this week. And just so you know, a lot of your questions on Twitter, some, like, if you ask the draft related question, we're going to try to get to some of them on the draft show later this week. So if you didn't hear yours today, that's why. Sorry, a little housekeeping. You can go introduce Craig, the greatest person in the history of the world.
Well, the greatest person in the history of the world is the big Renaissance man himself, Craig Stout. How are you doing today, pal? What are you going to do on your bye week besides building an entire helicopter from scratch?
Okay, definitely not building an entire helicopter from scratch. That's not what I do. I also don't appreciate that you said the greatest person in the world twice, literally twice on this podcast. I too will end up probably watching a bunch of college prospects, catching up on draft guide stuff. I am very excited to get further into it. We've gotten started a little bit, but we'll get into that tomorrow. I really do enjoy that Kent went out of his way to talk about how tough blog life really is for all of us. I mean, I don't think you guys understand the true struggle of really writing for a blog here. Kent, let's kick off this mailbag and get this bye week started so that you can get your rest, buddy.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes you just need to step away. That's all I got to say.
The greatest and the most humble person on earth.
Look at this thing. All right. 5-star reviews. If you leave a question with your 5-star review, we answer it. Tyler Payne Willis asks, I'm scared about the Chiefs' wide receivers and cornerback matchup against the Bucks and the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Can we stop these wide receiver groups?
Probably not, but that hasn't stopped the Chiefs in the past when they couldn't stop other teams' wide receiver groups, so I'm not sure it's as big of a concern for them as it is other teams. The way Steve Spagnuolo runs this defense, it's not all on the cornerbacks to stop wide receivers from winning, or the Chiefs would lose a lot more games or give up a lot more points than they do. They do a good job confusing the opposing team's quarterback. They do get pressure when they need to get pressure. They're relatively opportunistic, and they have a good safety group that helps take away the middle of the field. So on paper, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, so on and so forth, should dominate the Chiefs' cornerbacks. It just hasn't come to fruition versus other good wide receiver groups in the NFL so far. And we'll even get a little bit of a preview of this when the Chiefs play the Buccaneers later this season. So we'll see how it goes then. But I think it'll be okay. I actually, of those groups, I think that's some of the better matchups just because DK Metcalf, a bigger guy, allow physical press corners to get into a Mike Evans. You're at least going to have your chance to be physical with some of these guys before they outrun you, which might help that pass rush get home.
Maddie nailed about all of it. But, I mean, the Chiefs aren't going to win a Super Bowl because their defense just stops everyone. They're going to win a Super Bowl because they score a ton of points and their defense does enough for them to win the Super Bowl. Like, that's really what it's going to come down to. Austin 9911-8822 asks, which philosophy would you guys prefer? The Patriots put the players in the positions they're comfortable with, or the Chiefs where they have all the cornerbacks and linemen capable to play every position?
See, I think that they've kind of found a little bit of a happy medium in that. I do think that Steve Spagnuolo is very comfortable getting smart players that can kind of rotate all along. You know, the secondary there, they can play a lot of safety. They can kick down in the slot. They can even kick outside if they need to. I also agree with the lineman aspect of that, being able both on the defensive and offensive line, be able to play multiple positions, be versatile, and win in various ways. That's positive. I do think the Patriots have a little bit of that, but I do think that, you know, Bill Belichick is the master of getting the absolute most out of every single player that he seems to coach on defense. He just seems to maximize literally everybody. It's why people go after, you know, these coaches, these defensive coaches for the Patriots, because they're hoping a little bit of that rubs off when you're getting fifth and sixth round draft picks to contribute in a major way. That's a big win. You've seen that so far with Brendan Daly and the Chiefs. They're getting good production out of some of these later round guys. I think that that's going to continue, and I think you're going to see kind of a happy medium between those two philosophies.
Bobo 52, we will get your question on the draft show. All right, apnerdsquad@gmail.com. If you don't leave a review or don't want to, don't have Twitter, don't want to ask on Twitter, whatever, you can reach out at apnerdsquad@gmail.com and email in your questions. Keith Rains in Little River, Kansas did that, and he says, hello, big three of Chiefs podcasts. I didn't buy the pool.
I'm definitely the running back because my position doesn't matter.
Well, yes, that's absolutely true. He says I didn't buy the fool's gold in the instant success of Chiefs run blocking after the Bills game. In addition, I don't care if we run the ball at all. Me either, buddy. I am curious about run blocking and running styles. Larry Johnson averaged 2 yards per carry in 2009 and was replaced by Jamal Charles's almost seven. The offensive line didn't get that much better, so I give credit to Charles and run calls that played to his strengths. If we need to run the ball, for example, when we need one first down to ice the game because Andy apparently forgets he has Patrick Mahomes, do we have backs whose running style mesh with our blocking style? Great question.
As for that 2009 season, I believe that was when Larry Johnson decided that football really never mattered to him. So there is a little bit of effort involved with his 2 yards per carry in that offensive line and the fact that Jamal Charles was one of the most talented running backs ever. But as far as what the Chiefs have right now, no, I don't think so. I think the Chiefs are trying to trend in the direction of having a little bit more powerful offensive line that can run inside zone, split zone, maybe do some power concepts, which will fit Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Le'Veon Bell a little bit better. But as it stands right now, with the injuries, with the lack of consistency of not only the cohesion of the unit, but the individual players, it's really hard to be a patient runner behind this offensive line who seems like they're either blowing somebody off the ball, a la the Bills game, or getting blown off the ball just about every other game this season. There's just no consistency there. So Le'Veon Bell, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, they're patient guys. They like to set up linebackers that are unblocked by hiding behind their blocks, making the linebacker pick a hole or a gap to go into before they dart to another one. And they're just not able to do that when the offensive line is not blocking well. I do think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be better off with the team going forward because he's quicker. He's more explosive. I think you can see it. Le'Veon Bell looks slow. He's big. He falls forward for an extra yard or two, but he's really slow. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, at least when there is a sliver of daylight, can get through it a little bit better. So hopefully it starts turning the corner. Hopefully they see more light boxes again. But I'm fine with never running the football if teams aren't going to give you a super light box. I think that's fine.
KC Kim Guy emailed in, can we talk about KC's poor end-of-half offense execution? The idea of deferring opening kicks is so that you have the opportunity for consecutive possessions on each side of the half, then better game management at the end of the half should be a priority, no? So far this season, whatever their plan is, it doesn't seem to be too successful. How does this season compare to last season?
I don't know that it really has changed drastically from this season to last season. I'm sure somebody's going to bomb in and tell me how drastically it's changed, but certainly this week in particular was egregious. The Chiefs didn't get off a field goal at the end of the first half and then didn't do anything with the first drive of the second half there. We've seen too often where that occurs. I don't know if Andy trusts Patrick Mahomes to maybe try and make a little something work. He tries to hold some stuff back. I mean, they had a penalty and came out of that penalty and called a timeout. Like, you can't do that. The clock stopped. You can't call a timeout with the clock stopped with like 8 seconds left to go. This just happens a little bit too often. Andy Reid had picked up that knock throughout his career of being a guy that had poor end of half clock management, poor end of game clock management. We've seen it a couple times in Kansas City. It hasn't really been as big of a problem, especially with Mahomes, but you do feel like you waste a few of these opportunities every single year with Andy Reid that you just think about, boy, that should have been 3, that should have been 10. You know, it doesn't really work out for the Chiefs, but you know, they keep trying it and eventually it's going to click.
It's kind of all over the place too. Like, it's just like sometimes it's like, oh, hey, I'm going to leave a tight end or I'm going to leave a timeout in my pocket.
Yeah.
Because like, totally needed that, you know. It's just, it's very bizarre and kind of just all over the place. Chris emailed in, why don't the Chiefs go for 2 after every touchdown? With 6 missed extra points, they're averaging less than 1 point per point after attempt. But you have to imagine with our offense, we'd get the 2-point conversion more than half the time, which would give them, on average, more than 1 point per 2-point attempt. It's a great point. I do think, you know, I like the idea of going for 2 a little bit more. I do think that there's a lot of challenges, though, with that, that people don't really talk a lot about. It's the 2-point conversion plays, it's hard to score 2 points down there in a tight area. Like, scoring in the deep red is a challenge for these guys. And you have to have a lot of quality plays if you're going to try to go for 2 all the time. I know, like, and this is completely different, but like, it's not like in college, we had, you know, maybe 3 2-point plays. The NFL, there's going to be more for sure, but it's not like they've just got 15 that they're ready to call. And there's some pacing to that. You know, the same way that Andy paces the offense and building the offense. There's some of that too with the 2-point conversions themselves too. You don't want to run out of 2-point play concepts. Like, that's a problem. Like, that makes it harder when you need them the most. That's not completely trying to explain away the philosophy about that, but it's hard to score down there. It's not that easy. I mean, it's, you know, like you said, 50-50 shot. It's not like a super easy thing that you can just do. And if you're doing it more consistently, you've got to get way more creative. And if you don't get more creative, then your percentages are going to go down because teams are going to be prepared for the looks that you throw at them. Jake Bond asks, hey guys, how's your day going? 2 questions. How do you think Charvarius Ward played against the Panthers? And with Taco Charlton set to miss time, is former first-round defensive end Tackerus McKinley worth a flyer? Also, hey, shout-out to Leighton Y for a similar question about Tack McKinley.
Day's a little annoying. Tried to spray stain a bunch of fence posts today. It didn't work. It came out real sticky, uneven. So day, not great. Kind of wasted. But I don't think Charvarius Ward played great versus the Panthers. Anything short and in-breaking when he's playing in press, he does well. And he broke up a couple slants, which is great. I think that's where Charvarius Ward's at his best. If the play happens really quick while his eyes are still forward on the quarterback, he has the length, he has the physicality to disrupt wide receivers, come break down, make a play on the ball. When you ask him to start reading the wide receiver, reading the route, flipping his hips, turning, running, locating the ball, so on and so forth. It looks really bad. So anytime he's within like 7 yards of the line of scrimmage, he's been okay. He had a pretty good day in that regard in the first 7 yards of the line of scrimmage versus the Panthers. As soon as he gets beyond that, as soon as he has to flip his hips to go make a play, not so good. And that includes in the game against the Panthers. He gets lost trying to get vertical. Anytime a wide receiver breaks, once they make him turn once, they're wide open. He's not playing as well as he did last year. And I think last year was a little bit fluky when you look at the whole season and not just certain segments of it. So I think he's definitely not taken a step forward that a lot of people thought. He might even be the weak point of the secondary at this point in time. As far as another defensive end replacement, yeah, I'd love Tack McKinley. I think for a couple plays a game, he offers a little bit more speed than they currently have now that Taco Charlton's out. But really, anybody offers more speed at defensive end than what they currently have with Taco Charlton out.
Yeah, Matty Nail Charvarius. Again, if he's not flipped his hips yet, positive ball skills. If he has flipped his hips, negative ball skills. That's really the delineating line right there. Tack McKinley, on the other hand, is potentially a good dime rusher for the Chiefs defense. Taco Charlton, that was mainly his focus and his role for this Chiefs defense so far. You didn't really see him too often in the base defense. You didn't really see him too often even in the nickel defense as a guy that's out there trying to stop the run or set an edge. They primarily brought him in as a dime rotational rusher, and he was very effective. He didn't have to worry about the run. He doesn't have to worry about setting an edge. He doesn't have to worry about what's happening in the backfield. He just gets to pin his ears back and rush. Tack McKinley can come in here and do exactly that. He doesn't have to necessarily learn an entire defense, learn all of his run fits or anything like that. He can pick up pretty quickly, get on the field really, really quickly with Brendan Daly and Steve Spagnuolo and be able to contribute as a pass rusher. That's a position that they haven't had a whole lot of juice off of the edge, haven't had a whole lot of effectivity outside of Frank Clark and Chris Jones. That third piece might be the thing that could push him over the top if he lasts and waivers to the Chiefs.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more of your questions right after this. All right, time to jump to the questions from Twitter. Our guy, NateCH32, how much do you love the Daryl Williams designed plays on third down? I know we all love seeing more of Daryl the Barrel.
Third down, first down, fourth down, eighth down, it doesn't matter. I don't like design plays for Daryl Williams. I get it. If you get the look that you really like pre-snap and you want to hit Daryl Williams on a seam route or you want to hit Daryl Williams on a quick swing because he's your third most trusted third down back in pass protection, the look the defense gives you says, hey, he's going to be open, completely fine. Calling up a very obviously designed, well thought out play for a screen pass to Daryl Williams off of misdirection makes no sense. That play is going to be no more or less effective in terms of confusing the defense, no matter who the running back is. It doesn't matter if it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire back there. You're not going to keep an extra safety or linebacker focused just because it's Clyde or just because it's Le'Veon Bell. The misdirection aspect is taking all that away. Calling a play of that nature for Daryl Williams specifically, well, is going to result in a 3-yard gain when you should pick up, even with the horrendous blocking, at least 8, just by being a little bit patient and a little bit more talented. I like Daryl Williams as a player. I think he is not a bad football player. I just don't think right now on this team, play should be designed specifically for him unless the look of the defense says, hey, your running back's going to be wide open.
I did love the ridiculous look, though, with the triple I formation, super deep, jet out of it. Loved the look. It was fantastic.
All wasted.
Didn't work. but sometimes I don't even care if it works.
It worked. Like, there was 3 blockers climbing to 2 defenders and then a defensive back that was coming in later to the point. It worked. Just everybody involved in the execution fell on their face, literally.
Literally. What was it? Would they have got the first down if they had blocked that, you think? I think it still would have been tight.
I think if it wasn't Daryl Williams and they played it a little bit better, then yes, there was a chance. But the issue is the blocking was bad too. Like, all the blockers overran their marks. Somebody tried to cut somebody in space and it didn't work. It's just hard to tell if the blocks would have been okay had Daryl not pressed up immediately into them and let them get set up instead. The two were on different pages. The blockers were trying to play a little bit more patiently. Daryl decided to go, you know, 60 miles an hour off the get-go, like 40 miles an hour off the get-go. Let's not get that crazy here. And so that's where it all fell apart. But I think another running back gets more than 3 yards. Maybe the patience allows the blockers to actually connect, produce a first down out of it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was something. Cedra 24. If the Chiefs get all these comp picks that they're talking about, tell me what you think Veach's mood is when he has some ammo to play with for draft day trades. If you don't know, it looks as though the Chiefs will be getting back-to-back third-round compensatory picks when Eric Bieniemy eventually becomes a head coach. There is a new initiative to try and help develop and encourage minorities to be put in positions of leadership in organizations. The Chiefs look like the first team that's very obviously going to benefit from this. If Eric Bieniemy gets a head coaching job this year, the Chiefs will get 2 third-round picks. Oh, by the way, checked recently, Nick Cordy does some fantastic work over the cap. It looks like Kendall Fuller's the compensatory pick for Kendall Fuller's loss is counting as a 4th-round pick. Chiefs have a 3rd, 4th, and 5th-round pick. Add them all together, it's worth the value of about the 82nd pick in the draft. That's pretty significant for not doing anything. So that's a really nice addition. You could see Brett Veach is going to – if Brett Veach trades both third-round picks, he can get up to the top of the 3rd round or the late 2nd. So there's some potential here for him to move some stuff around or just get another quality player. You got to remember, Lucas Niang was around that 100 range. That's a good football player. You could load up on 4 really quality players there, or you can use one of those assets to move up.
You guys got compensatory Swanson out here. Really, really excited.
I'm geeked out. I was playing cool in the game for an hour straight when I saw that we were going to get 2 picks for Eric Bieniemy.
I mean, yeah, that's fantastic. Especially as guys that are into the draft as much as we are. We're really excited about having an extra 3rd-round pick in consecutive years here. I think that will allow Brett Veach, if he's sitting potentially like at the bottom of the 2nd round, it affords him the ability to go up and get a guy that he maybe hears another team is interested in. The Chiefs are always going to be at the back end of every single round with Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback. This just gives them a little bit of flexibility, and you're going to continue to load up on a lot of these compensatory picks because, frankly, A, the Chiefs aren't going to be big spenders in free agency as long as they keep handing out big contracts, and B, they're going to let good players walk because they are finding good players in free agency on 1-year deals, and they're drafting good ones as well. So it's just going to keep restocking the cupboard. I think you're going to see a lot of those little move-ups to go get guys using these types of picks. I'm sure Brett Veach is just salivating over the flexibility that he has.
I'm just going to take this time to say trade all day 3 picks for a single pick in the top 100. If you did that with these projected comp picks and the current day 3 Chiefs picks that they have, you could trade up into the late 70s or early 80s. That would leave you with, checks notes, 5 picks in the top 100. You cannot convince me that swinging 5 times on day 3 is better than the extra top 100 pick. Just take your 5 top 100 picks, sign a bunch of undrafted free agents, and be a better football team.
Alex Kogan asks, says, big fan from Mexico. Shout out, Alex. What's your final prediction for the season?
Super Bowl. I think it's a Super Bowl. The Chiefs are pretty clearly the best team in the NFL. The NFL's only unbeaten team right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers, seems to be trying to allow multiple teams to hang with them that are significantly worse than the Christian McCaffrey-led Carolina Panthers. Make no mistake, you can look at the Carolina Panthers' record and offensive stats and think, how did they hang around with the Chiefs? That's a completely different team with Christian McCaffrey on it. And then, of course, he's going to be out for a couple weeks and make this, you know, Chiefs win look worse. I think that the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes are the best team in the league, and it doesn't even require them to play at their best to be the best team in the league. But frankly, when the defense is clicking and the pass rush is going and Patrick Mahomes is on point, I just don't see a whole lot of teams in the league that can even hang with the Chiefs, let alone come up and stop them.
For me, it's 14-2 with one random loss later in the year because the Chiefs take their foot off the gas. Then afterwards, they kind of get recalibrated for like the eighth time this year, and they go on to win the Super Bowl again. Because like Craig said, when everything's clicking, they're easily the best team in the NFL. It's not even close. Even when things are going at 90%, they're probably still the best team in the NFL. And because of Patrick LeVon Mahomes, they can play a C-plus game and beat anybody else in the league. There's just too many ways and too many opportunities for them to win the Super Bowl. I do think they will pull it off again this year.
Sweep it. We can't call it a blowout, though, because then some people will get upset. But I think the Chiefs' season ends in confetti in Tampa. Captain Denny, once we hit the playoffs last year, the offensive game scripts were 2018 level good. Do we see that kind of jump again in the playoffs? Abso-freaking-lutely. I've been kind of, we've talked about this a little bit over the course of last week. The goal of any offense, the goal of any NFL team, is to try to show as little while winning the game and winning it at least comfortably. Andy Reid is not going to show everything he has. He's got plenty to work with. He's pacing himself throughout the season. He's showing what he wants to show when he wants it. He's giving teams a lot to try to work against. But he's got more than enough ready for whatever comes against them in the playoffs. And that's why you see that. He holds stuff back for the right moments. And he will be more than ready. The ammunition will be loaded. And the best offense in the world will play like the best offense in the world in the playoffs. And that's why you got to have a lot of hope. Also, having the best player in the world kind of helps too. But that's, yes, they're gonna have some really great scripts during the playoffs.
I agree. I think anytime the Chiefs know that the game is a big game, anytime that it's very obvious there's no way around it, that the game matters, the Chiefs show up and they play a quality game. Sometimes they start slow, but you look at last year in the playoffs when they played the Ravens the last couple times, when they know the game is going to matter, when they know the game means something, they show up. The game plan is usually really good with some fun wrinkles. No doubt it's going to happen this year again once they hit the playoffs.
Very important question, guys. Kay Gumminger, what is the best Hall & Oates song? Maddie, lead it off.
I like so many of them. Sometimes I like to get the variety pack even. Like apple cinnamon's a pretty good oatmeal flavor. But I'm a classics guy. Maple brown sugar is still my go-to. When I'm sick, actually, that's a comfort meal for me. Maple brown sugar oatmeal, I definitely eat that. So yeah, I'm a big maple brown sugar guy.
Christian, I'm disappointed in you. You're in my DMs. We're going to discuss this. How dare you set Kent up like this? You did this on purpose? How dare you?
Hall & Oates liked my tweet once. That's why this is in there. I really enjoy it. Me, Matt Derrick, and Cody Tapp are going to start a Hall & Oates podcast at some point. It's in the works. We probably should have done it during COVID. I go back and forth with this answer all the time, but today, for today...
Oh, you're actually answering this? This wasn't just a joke?
Oh. No, I'm answering this question. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. It's Private Eyes, at least right now. It's a great song. Have you guys ever seen She's Out of My League? The movie?
Yes.
Jay Baruchel?
Yes.
Is that like a Division III college I don't know about?
Jay Baruchel, it's... There's a Hall & Oates cover band in it, and it's so good. It's just the whole movie's great, but adding that element, it's phenomenal.
I'm cutting all of this out.
They do a great. I don't care. They do a great rendition of "Kisses on My List," and it's a delight. Brandon 422, how big of a lottery win did Brett Veach get in Tershawn Wharton, and what's his ceiling player comp? Aaron Donald.
I mean. Never comp anybody to Aaron Donald ever.
It's Aaron Donald in every way, shape, or form. We're going to have to figure out how to pay him in a few years because he's just a game changer.
Go back to listening to Hall and Oates. Turk Wharton is a massive get for Brett Veach. You don't get UDFAs that can contribute in a meaningful way like Turk Wharton very often. And frankly, he looks like a linchpin going forward. He has already supplanted a third round pick, a top 100 pick in this rotation, a guy that the Chiefs probably were counting on to be major, a guy that was a major player going forward in his rookie deal. Now all of a sudden, he's a healthy scratch every week for Turk Wharton, who looks good. I mean, sure, he's got a lot to work out. He doesn't have a very good pass rush plan. He's a little light in the pants, gets blown off the ball a little bit. But that first step and that penetrative ability is crucial. And he can wreak havoc several times a game just because of that penetrative ability. Plus, he's got a motor that never quits. Everybody is going to, you know, remember that fourth down play that Ben Neiman, didn't get to. Turk Wharton was right behind Teddy Bridgewater, chasing him down after getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage on his pass rush. He's a guy that the Chiefs are going to hang their hat on because he works hard. He's really good at what he does, and he does have a little bit of juice. He's going to be a guy that's going to stick around for a little while. He's going to get paid. I mean, Kent's not wrong. He's going to get paid because he's going to be good enough to earn a decent second contract.
I wasn't serious, though. Anyway, sorry, Matty. Your turn.
No, I mean, they obviously hit big with him. He looks really good, and from all accounts, the coaching staff loves him because he's always willing to work hard. I think you've seen anybody who watched him in college saw a guy that was a better athlete than everybody else in the field and essentially just ran. That's how he made all of his plays in college, was just run. And what sometimes it was running by the offensive line, not to a lot of production, but just running. Sometimes it was chasing plays down from behind like we've seen him do in the NFL, but he essentially just ran. The NFL, like Craig said, there's a lot of development still to go, especially if he's going to succeed at the NFL, he's going to need to work on his hands. His hand usage has got to get better because he doesn't have the length or the mass to overpower that many guys. But if you get his hands working to keep his chest clean, you pair that with his lateral agility and explosiveness, yeah, he's definitely a guy that could potentially start in the league as a three tech or always be a rotational pass rusher. I mean, like, in terms of who he's going to be as an NFL comp, I don't have one right now.
Aaron Donald.
If everything went perfectly well and he developed his hands, he filled out his frame a little bit better, I would say like a very, very, very poor man's Grady Jarrett. That's how he plays to me.
Ooh.
And Grady Jarrett's a little bit undersized. He's a guy that wins off of quickness, but it's not a guy that wins a lot of long reps as a pass rusher. It's quick. He wins really quick off the snap, or he kind of fades off. I think Tershawn Wharton at his absolute best would be a very poor man's version of Grady Jarrett.
He's really tough to comp because, first off, we got to just make sure this is known. He's not 6'4", 255 pounds.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs websites had him listed at 6'4", 255 this entire time. It's more like 6'1", 285.
Yeah.
Very Aaron Donald like in his frame. That's it though. So he's kind of a tough guy to pin down though from a comp perspective, because he's pretty light. I don't think he's ever going to be able to put more onto his frame, frankly. Like, I think he's always going to be a guy that's around 285 pounds. I don't think he's going to be able to put much on beyond that, and that makes the comp a little bit difficult. But there's some Grady Jarrett there. I could see a little bit of that, like a poor man's Grady Jarrett. One thing I do know, good athletic profile, outstanding effort, you're going to play in the league for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out Tershawn Wharton, because those two things are going to get you paid, buddy. I really can't wait to see you develop in Kansas City. I have a small crush on him. He's been one of the most fun players for me to watch. I'm always kind of looking out for him. I'm really excited to see his development moving forward. KC2429, do we have enough depth at defensive end to handle the loss of Taco? Could the Chiefs kick out Chris Jones to defensive end more and bring in someone like Dontari Poe or Marcel Darius?
No to both. I think the defensive in-depth is very scary right now. I think, yes, you're going to get Alex Okafor back, and it sounds like the Chiefs feel confident he's going to come back with the releasing or waiving of Damone Harris. They obviously have some kind of plan. But I still think you need someone else because, one, the depth was a little scarce to begin with. Two, Alex Okafor can't be trusted to remain healthy. You need somebody else to rush the passer. Tano Pastaneo, Mike Dana, these guys aren't great pass rushers at defensive end. They're good all-around players right now, but neither one of them have any kind of pass rush dynamic ability. If you're asking someone to speed rush on this team, it has to be Frank Clark right now. He is the literal only option to be a guy to get deep in the pocket off the snap. If you're looking at rush lanes, he is the only person that can occupy a deep rush lane. And that includes when you push Chris Jones outside. That's kind of the issue you get. If Chris Jones is outside, he's a pure power rusher. Every time he wins, it's a bull rush. Or it's an inside move, and it's kind of catching an offensive tackle off guard because they're not used to seeing Chris Jones. If you start playing him out there more, I think he becomes less effective as a pass rusher because players will know how to play against him more often. And then you have the issue of dealing with him as a run defender in space. They need a defensive end. Most importantly, they need a defensive end so they have another threat to speed rush off the edge. You've got to have some kind of speed to put on the field, even if for only 5-6 snaps a game across from Frank Clark.
Make no mistake, Chris Jones is not playing defensive end very often at all this season, and it's been in the dime when he doesn't have to worry about the run game. And yeah, it's just been mainly a power rush from a defensive end position that's maybe a snap a game, maybe two snaps a game like it was this past week. It's not a routine thing that they've got lined up there. He's definitely not getting them in the base of the nickel. It is only obvious passing downs, and if frankly, it just hasn't worked particularly well. So I don't think that that is a method that they want to really rely on going forward.
Ricardo Istambu asks, I noticed Armani Watts making clutch tackles on defense last week's game. He always shows up on special teams as well. Has he taken some steps forward this year, and should his playing time continue to increase?
Armani Watts was on the field because Rashad Fenton came up with a hip or an ankle or something like that about two plays before Armani Watts stepped on the field in the dime, and Rashad Fenton was out for the rest of the game. Now, make no mistake, Rashad Fenton did well with the reps that he was given. He had the good pass breakup. He made some secure tackles. That was good to see. But this coaching staff still prefers Rashad Fenton over him in the dime. And this is the first game that Tedrick Thompson has been inactive, and they preferred Tedrick Thompson over Armani Watts in the dime as well. I think that Armani Watts is firmly planted at the back of the safety group, but he gets those reps because Dave Tobe and because he has been particularly good on special teams. He deserves to be on the active roster week after week. I think you just saw an instance this week of Tedrick Thompson not being active and Rashad Fenton going out hurt that he got those opportunities. I don't know that that's anything to read into more than that.
Chief Anglin 55, why do you think Daniel Kilgore was benched after two strong showings, and do you think that center is a problem going forward? Yes, center's a problem going forward. Also, I don't know how great Daniel Kilgore has been since his first game, and I think that's part of the reason. I don't think there was any noticeable change in what Dan Kilgore was doing compared to Austin Ryder. So I think they just made the move. Maybe they're a little bit more comfortable with a guy that's been there a little bit longer, has a better understanding of everything. Maybe they think he's a better communicator. I'm not quite sure. I think the arrow's kind of pointed down on Danny Kilgore since this first game. And since then, I don't really think, I think it's been kind of trending in the wrong direction. So I think that's part of it. Although neither of these guys is particularly good. They're both very easily replaceable, and would not be stunned to see the Chiefs invest in an interior offensive lineman at center, specifically a center early next year.
Yeah, Daniel Kilgore had a very good first game against the Bills, but the entire offensive line did, so maybe that was a little bit more of the Bills and not the Chiefs' offensive line doing well. I don't think he was bad. I think he should start over Austin Ryder based on what I've seen. I don't think he has actively been a problem as often as Austin Ryder was. So I do believe Kilgore should keep seeing starts. I just don't think he had two strong showings. I think it was a strong showing followed by an average one. And just, you could see the flaws. You could see why he was a guy the Chiefs were able to get when he was. center is going to be a problem, just like the entire interior offensive line is going to be a problem until they get more talent on the unit. But if this game showed us anything, it's that Daniel Kilgore being average, below average, slightly below average, is still significantly better than Austin Ryder.
Ball game 1-2-3-2. Can we set Hardman as an all-time player to watch each week because his development is so important? It's kind of true. He shows up every week on a player to watch during every single game, Greg.
It's funny because before we record the podcast, we often have discussions about, oh, we covered him last week or we did that last week. And when McColl comes up, we don't really say that for him because it is very important. You do genuinely want to see how he grows week to week, what he adds to his route tree. He had that nice corner post that he ran for that deep route or in this Panthers game. You want to see him continue to add, and we're starting to see him continue to add. I don't think that he was necessarily a terrific player this past weekend, but it was good still. I felt like he still did some positive things out there. The offense obviously ran through Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce this week, as it probably should every week. But when you get those reps out of McColl Hardman where he's able to bust those things open, he's a nice, for lack of a better term, off-speed pitch that you can throw, that you can go to the well and be able to put on the field and know that he's going to be able to handle something. And as he adds to his repertoire, it just gives coaches more confidence. I think you're seeing a building of that confidence as the season goes along. I'm very curious to see how he finishes off the back half of the year.
I like some of the development we started to see from McColl Hardman. I don't want to say this game was a step back. It's just you didn't get to see near as much of it in this game because of the way the game script went. I don't think the Chiefs opened up as much stuff, which meant, and they meant a lot less jet motion. It meant a lot less unique plays and just more, hey, wide receivers, go run, not basic routes, but more simplified routes and just beat the coverage because you're better than them, which doesn't lend itself to McColl Hardman at this point of his career as well as it does Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce or DeMarcus Robinson even. They're all a little bit more technical players at this point in time. So I don't even care about this week. I do wonder, though, how important is it that McColl Hardman develops? Because if he continues in the pace he is right now, if he is just this exact same player for his entire tenure in Kansas City, that's still useful. He would have to undergo crazy amounts of development to overtake Tyreek Hill's position, which is where McColl Hardman will always be the best. He's never going to develop into an X wide receiver because that's just not his game. So even if McColl Hardman just stays at what he is and you get 4 years of this level of production of an offensive weapon out of him, I don't think that's a bad thing. So I don't know if his development is that important for the Chiefs going forward. I just do hope you continue to see more development. Maybe you can find a way to integrate him as a full-time third wide receiver.
Yeah, he's not going to I think a lot of people have hopes that he's going to more or less be that wide receiver two type, and I just don't see that happening for him more because of just play style too. Like there's an element of that too. But yeah, I think we're all really hoping that he continues to develop. And like that's what we've been talking about this entire season. The reason that he's come up so much is because his development is important to the, you know, this offense continuing to grow. And in his growth too, like, I mean, if he becomes a more dynamic weapon, a more complete weapon, that's a really valuable thing for this team moving forward, even though they are going to have to find a way to invest in the wide receiver position to get a different type of body, an X type that's going to see the field in a lot of different places. I mean, DeMarcus Robinson is still getting a ton of snaps here. Him and McColl are kind of splitting some stuff up here. But, yeah, you're rooting for McColl to continue to develop and grow. I think the last 3 or 4 weeks, you've seen some positive indicators. The route tree looks to have expanded a little bit. He's getting targeted in different points of the game. A lot of, even that's kind of funny, like a lot of his production still coming in that first 15, which isn't entirely a knock. They're trying to get him going, and they're getting him going early. It's just he kind of fades as the game goes on a lot of times. But you do see him having some success early, and you like to see that. And you just want to continue to build. Just keep growing. Keep developing. Hopefully good things will happen. These last 3-4 weeks, whatever it's been, has been a really positive indicator. Curious to see what happens when Sammy Watkins gets back. DSilky10 asks the question of 2020. I call this question the Tyler Paradox. So the scenario is that we are in an alternate universe where we have the same Chiefs roster minus Patrick Mahomes, who would win more games in 2020, all in their prime. Tyler Palko, Tyler Bray, or Tyler Thigpen? I think the answer is the Thigbone, although he'd have more weapons than he knows what to do with. And, you know, he might... Andy's really going to have to try hard still. But I think Andy can get most out of the most athletic of these three. And the guy that should... I think of all these guys, Tyler Thigpen had the best career. It was in a short spurt, but none of these guys had a good career.
I mean, Tyler Thigpen has to be the answer just because you can maybe create a weird enough offense that it works. That's all I can come up with at this point in time. Like, he has to be the best one.
Tyler Bray.
Craig is, time out. Craig is, real quick. Craig has been looking at both of us like, you idiot.
Tyler Thigpen can't throw the ball. Tyler Bray can throw the ball downfield. With these weapons, he'd at least hit on a couple of deep passes. What are we talking about here?
Are you kidding me? Did you see Tyler Bray get any? Tyler Bray was on this team, basically.
He played with these weapons.
He fumbled the ball.
They had to put Patrick Mahomes back in the game to win.
Tyler Bray almost ruined Patrick Mahomes' first career win in Denver. And he did it in like three plays. And he was like, well.
Okay, so the question is, who would win more games with Andy Reid's chosen squad? And the quarterback that Andy Reid went out of his way to keep on his roster for several years is not the automatic first choice with the vertical threats.
If Tyler Thigpen.
Listen, I love the Thigbone, but let's not glorify that offense. It was awful. I think we can all agree that Tyler Palko is a bottom one quarterback. So ever. So we don't have that argument here. But, man, give me Tyler Bray's vertical threat. I will also say that all of us lose if that's the situation. So it's not a question of winning. It's a question of all of us losing.
24-year-old Tyler Bray, or Tyler Thigpen. I'm already screwing up. 55% completion.
Gross.
2,600 yards passing, 18 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. He also... I can't find the rushing stats. Hold on. I got him. 386 yards on the ground. And you're going to tell me that the Chiefs are better with a baby giraffe back there, limbs flying all over the place, along with the ball being lost half the time.
With
Andy Reid would
scheme.
No. Andy Reid would find ways to get his talented weapons involved. They'd get Tyler Thigpen moving a little bit. I don't understand how you could go Tyler Bray. I am like legitimately angry at you right now, Craig.
You are the one that wants to throw the ball all the time, and you're like, I'm going to go with the dude with the 55% completion percentage in his best season.
There's a difference between want to and can, and Tyler Bray can't.
I beg the triple option.
We don't need to do stats. Just move on. I don't think there's any need to do stats. By the way, Tyler Bray's college stats.
Only pass attempt was in that game that he blew.
Tyler Bray's college
completion percentage is zero.
His college completion percentage was 58%. College completion percentage was 58%. College.
In Tennessee with no weapons. I mean, look at that.
He had Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah,
Cordarrelle Patterson.
Wait. Yeah, let's move on. You're bringing up Cordarrelle Patterson as a weapon.
You're trying to cite 58% completion rate in college. Anyways, that was the most fun I've had on this podcast in a while. Lolit McGee won. Craig, you're wrong, by the way. Like, just so wrong. Lolit McGee, how much of an impact will the return of L'Jarius Sneed make for this defense? Describe the progression of Willie Gay from week one until now, Craig.
I mean, L'Jarius Sneed's going to make a massive impact on this defense. They'll have a cornerback that can run a little bit with some of these speedier options that are coming up. That's a major plus on the outside. L'Jarius looked even better than I think we could have expected him to look, and having some more ball skills on the outside, regardless of who he replaces, is a big, big, big benefit, because we've seen a lot of times here where the Chiefs have given up some big plays when they haven't been able to get their heads around and break up the pass when they were in a good position. I expect Legarius Sneed to step up, break up a couple more of those. That results in more stops. That results in bigger leads. That results in more teeing off of the pass rush. Major impact. Willie Gay, till now, is still learning. If you watch his game week to week to week to week, he is picking some things up as he goes along. He's learning a little bit as he goes along. But frankly, he's just not teeing off. He's not able to really get in the playbook and be able to play mentally fast just yet. He's still got a lot of growth to go. I know everybody wants him to get on the field over Ben Neiman in the dime. That's just not going to happen. I know that he's a better athlete. I know that he'd come up and make some better plays, but the coaching staff just frankly does not trust him to be in the right spots, to make the right reads, to position himself correctly, and for good reason. He's not doing it on every snap, so I think you just need to keep seeing a little bit of growth. I like the involvement that he's gotten so far, but he needs a little more.
If you get just a little bit of time to watch Willie Gay play from the end zone view, from the all 22 angle, you know, when you get from the end zone, you can see very quickly where he is still learning to make his reads. He's a little late to flow on runs to his side from the backside. You can see, I wrote about it a couple weeks ago, there's good there, but he's also struggling still to read multiple things at the same time, to process it quickly. I think he's gotten better since week one. I think he's a good athlete. I do think he is reacting a little bit quicker. He's a very good reactive player right now, but you can't always be reacting right now. And I think that's where the issue is with the Chiefs. They don't want a guy that's just out there reacting to everything. They want a guy to be a little bit more proactive. Damian Wilson gives you that right now. Anthony Hitchens can give you that right now. That's where the gap is from why he can't see the field to when he will. I do think putting him out there full-time right now at this exact moment might have a net negative effect over what you were currently getting. Might. It'd be close. The plays would be entirely different, but there might be a net negative effect. I think it's that lack of confidence is why he's not out there. As far as Legarius Sneed, hey, to me, anything that gets Charvarius Ward off the field is a bonus right now. I think he's one of the liabilities on the team. If I'm listing three players that I think are a liability right now, it obviously starts with Ben Neiman, and I believe Charvarius Ward might come up as number two. Number three, I guess, is just in general defensive tackles against the run, which is maybe the defensive line, so that's not a player. So really, Charvarius Ward's my second player that's giving up plays for the Chiefs defense. If I can get him off the field, if I can replace him with a guy that was playing as good as Sneed was, or even half as good as Sneed was, this defense instantly becomes a lot better. Give me Sneed on the field across from Bashaud Breeland as soon as possible.
All right, that is going to do it for the mailbag edition of the AP Laboratory. We'll be back with the draft show later this week. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you later.
Just run the Ravens offense with Tyler Thigpen. Neither quarterback can throw.